Roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 20th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Excuse.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick. Esquibel, Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Hines,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Ross,
here.
Bebout,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by Senator Cooper. Our Father in heaven, Father, we're grateful this day for the opportunity we have once again to serve the wonderful and good people of this state of Wyoming. We're grateful for the service that we are able to provide to our fellow citizens. And we're grateful unto thee for the many opportunities we have of providing the service to our fellow beings here in this state. We're grateful unto thee also, Father, for thy help and thy blessings and thy wisdom that we receive on a daily basis. Father, we ask thee to be with us this day, and that thy Spirit will dwell with us in all that we do. We pray also, Father, that we may be indeed always a light unto others and never to be a judge unto others, that we will be able to have the spirit of cooperation and understanding with each other this day and all the proceedings that we do on this Senate floor. And we ask these things and thank thee for all that thou does. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, a nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Reading, correction, or approval of the journal, the reading clerk will read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 19th, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. The doctor of the day is Joe McGinley from Casper, and the nurse of the day is Annetta Cantlin and Heidi Pierce from Evanston. Today in Wyoming history, 1911, Governor Carey approved an act of the legislature that created Lincoln County out of part of Uinta County.
Right.
Thought for the day, it is a fine thing to be honest, but it is also very important to be right. Winston Churchill. Members of the Senate, today we have, we're being joined in the gallery by students and staff of Wyoming TRIO and Gear Up programs. These programs provide support for first-generation and low-income students and students with disabilities to aspire to, gain admission to, and to succeed in higher education. Please join me in welcoming the high school and college students in the gallery representing TRIO and Gear Up programs from Casper, Cheyenne, Laramie, and Sheridan. The TRIO and Gear Up students are also here today to honor Senator Esquibel, who has received the Champion TRIO Award.
All right.
This award is given annually to an elected official for active support and advocacy on behalf of the disadvantaged students in the region. They are here now, Senator Esquivel, to present you with a plaque that apparently you were unable to receive at the regional meeting. Congratulations, Senator Esquivel. Congratulations, Senator Esquivel,
right.
And thank you. Thank you to all the Trio and Gear Up students that are here today. Please enjoy your day. We wish you all the success in your future endeavors. Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 36 being original Senate File 5.
Senate Enrolled Act number 36 being original Senate File 5, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 36 being original Senate File 5. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 37 being original Senate File 22.
Senate Enrolled Act number 37 being original Senate File 22, an act relating to trade and commerce.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 37 being original Senate File 22. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 38 being original Senate File 11.
Senate Enrolled Act number 38 being original Senate File 11, and act relating to magistrates of the Circuit Court.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 38 being original Senate File 11. I have so signed. And Senate Enrolled Act 39 being original Senate File 117.
Senate Enrolled Act number 39 being original Senate File 117, an act relating to domestic violence protection.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 39 being original Senate File 117. I have so signed. Bills on second reading. House Bill 18, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 18, Telecommunications, Internet Protocol Enabled Services.
House Bill 18 have been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. House Bill 91, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 91.
House Bill 91, to engross copy, page 16, line 1.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment.
Mr. President, this is the bill on educational accountability, and if you'll recall the discussion in Committee of the Whole yesterday on page 16, lines 2 through 4, the following language is stricken. Failure to meet improvement goals as specified in the plan for two consecutive years may be grounds for dismissal of the school principal. And that language is in the existing law and is stricken in this law. And we discussed that a little yesterday, and it seems to me that all these accountability structures are very fine, but when the day's over, you've got to do something if the performance is not adequate. And the language that was stricken in this amendment proposes to restore says if they miss their plan for 2 years, it may be grounds for dismissal. It's not a certain thing, not something they have to do. But at some point, in this educational organizations, as in any successful human organization, Mr. President, if the key managers don't perform, you've got to replace them. There has to be somewhere in all this a hard edge of, if you don't perform, there are limits to the point which we're going to continue to require your services. And I think it's a mistake to stricken out the one piece in here that I think provides that. And at some point, you stop being in an environment where everybody succeeds all the time, so nobody really succeeds. And you say that if you can't make your organization, your school, perform, we need to get somebody who can. And that's what this amendment does. It reinserts that stricken language. There's plenty of room in that language for the school district involved to be sensible, to say there were special circumstances, to say that that principal was doing as best as anybody could. But at some point, they have to have cause to say, look, this school just isn't working. The students are suffering, and we need to replace a principal. So that's what this amendment does, and I would urge its adoption.
Discussion. Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, actually, a lot of what happens here, if we put this language back in, takes place in phase two. But if this gives the tall senator from Natrona County some comfort, I'd urge that we support it.
Any further discussion? Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 91 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is passed. House Bill 91. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 123, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 123, Restaurant Liquor Licenses Dispensing Rooms.
House Bill 123, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 134. Second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 134, Private Roads.
House Bill 134, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 139, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 139, Uniform Trust Code.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 139.
House Bill 139, second reading, amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 10, line 16.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this is not an amendment of great moment. What it does is desuchify the bill and makes it conform to our drafting standards.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's been adopted. House Bill 139 having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 145, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 145, insurance coverage of inherited enzymatic disorders.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 145.
House Bill 145, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 6.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move second reading amendment 1 to House Bill 14 and move for its adoption. Mr. President, the reason I bring that today, and I may vote no on this myself. But Mr. President, at the speed that we were going through yesterday, there's an important policy consideration that didn't get talked about yesterday. What House Bill 145 stands for is a mandatory expansion of an insurance mandate. In our history, we've had 3. We understand this would be 4. And I guess, Mr. President, I was hoping that by doing this, and the purpose of this amendment is to have some discussion about this. What the amendment does, Mr. President, is it goes in, and it simply, since we were talking about PKU, it goes in on page 3, and in line 7, it puts a period, it inserts an, and so it makes it for the two types of PKU, but excludes the other inherited enzymatic disorders. Mr. President, the reason why I bring this amendment, as I've said, is yesterday, I don't know how we do this going piecemeal, and in the years that I've been down here, Mr. President, I remember a year ago we denied the ability to provide hearing aids for expanded insurance coverage. Years before that, there was some other things that about every other year it seems that there's a bill that comes down here for expanded insurance coverage, and generally they've been resisted. And I'm trying to understand, Mr. President, what is our policy with respect to expanded insurance coverage? And if it is, there's some things in here that I could see that might pan out. Maybe if it's the bill is represented to cover about 22 people with this rare disorder. So maybe, Mr. President, our policy should be that, we're going to cover disorders that only have about 25 or less, or is it 30 or less? I mean, what is that number? Or if we talk about one of the other points in the bill was that a complaint, which is a general complaint all of us have had, that the insurance they pay for actually covers the treatment of their condition. Mr. President, that happens to all of us. My guess is that if we went around the room here and took a poll, we'd all find various forms of health insurance that we have that have not been covered. I know in my family we've had that. We've had to come out of pocket to cover things that weren't covered by insurance. And I'm not just talking about deductibles. I'm talking about actual. And so maybe, I don't know, is that our policy? In this, the cost of the bill to the insurance industry on the handout we received yesterday was estimated to be about $140,000 per year. Mr. President, maybe that should be our policy. Is our policy that if it's less than 140 or less than 200 or less than 250 or less than a million, what is our policy about when we're going to do insurance mandates? And finally, I think when you get down to it, one of the other ones that talks about in the handout we received yesterday said medical foods are not included in the Affordable Care Act. I think the testimony was yesterday that it was not covered by Medicaid, Mr. President. If our state doesn't cover it by Medicaid, but yet we're going to mandate our insurers to cover it by Medicaid, how does the state Medicaid office not cover this or any other disease that comes along that is not currently covered by insurance? So when we do that, then we look at this, what we're doing is creating a new program, Mr. President. And I think that ultimately it deserves some discussion, and I'd be interested to hear from the advocates. What is the policy, Mr. President, with respect to our state, and when will we vote for, and when will we expand mandatory insurance coverage, and when will we not?
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, there's an additional complication with this one And, Mr. President, this discussion is germane to the bill as a whole and to the amendment. Let me read from the national reform that was passed. I won't name the common name that we like to refer to it by, but this is from the consolidated print, page 70. It says, subject to the requirements of clause double I, a state may require that a qualified health plan offered in such state offer benefits in addition to the essential health benefits specified under section 1302B. And then paragraph double I, state must assume cost. A state shall make payments, one, to an individual enrolled in a qualified health plan offered in such state, or on behalf of an individual described in subclause 1, directly to the qualified health plan in which such individual is enrolled to defray the cost of any additional benefits described in clause 1. Mr. Chairman, that's the requirement in the new national reform. That's the language. Now, there's some uncertainty in here. The Federal Act does not directly mandate these benefits. It was attempted. The attempt, as I understand, failed in Congress by one vote, but it failed. However, in essential benefits, we wind up with a plan in the state that's used as the model for essential benefits. If it's the state employee's insurance plan, which it may be, that clearly does not cover the PKU benefits that are sought with this new insurance mandate. If, on the other hand, Mr. President, it's the plan, the largest plan offered by the by a private insurer in the state, the testimony in committee from that company was they do cover these. So we have an uncertainty, Mr. President, and this law is more than a little difficult to interpret and trace through all the things as to exactly what's meant here. But there is some risk, depending on how this essential benefits plan plays out, that the state will find itself on the hook, and I think the figure is in the $340,000 a year range for paying for this new benefit that we're mandating. And at this point, I could not stand here and tell you whether we will or will not get stuck for that cost as an ongoing annual expense, but we may. So that's an additional risk that is associated with this particular mandate at this particular time. And there may be some people in this state who can tell you exactly whether that will happen or not. But, Mr. President, I don't know who they are. And I know I can't tell you. All I can tell you is that based on that piece of the law, federal law that I read to you, that there is that risk.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. First, I'd like to speak to the amendment, because I think that's what was moved. The amendment really doesn't do much of anything to the bill. I don't have a particular problem with the amendment. What it does is it eliminates all of the other inherited enzymatic disorders. Those were actually added in just upon advice from our attorneys that if we're going to talk about one disorder, we should talk about all of the inherited enzymatic disorders. We didn't even really think about that until then, because all that other laundry list that this amendment seeks to eliminate, we have yet to find a single case of any of those in the state of Wyoming. So the amendment itself is certainly fine. There's not a problem with that. I believe there's another amendment coming that might be even better in terms of really specifying and really clarifying the bill. And so the amendments themselves, That's fine. But since my good colleagues have been addressing the bill, I would like to do that as well. It's absolutely true that we don't know what's going to happen with ACA, and we haven't known. There is uncertainty. It's the reason we chose not to bring this particular piece of legislation 2 years ago, because everyone said, now, we just don't know. We just don't know what ACA is going to do. And we said, okay, that's fair. But at what point do we say, are we going to continue waiting for the federal government to decide what it is they're doing and what it is they aren't doing? Because as the good chairman said, the trick here is which part of the essential benefits package. If it's the state plan, no, PKU coverage isn't there. If it's the big insurance plan out there, PKU's in there. It's already in there, and it's already covered in that particular plan. So what we're looking at here is really more of a bridge until January, until this goes into effect, because it's already in practice in some of these insurance companies. Now, I would like to really address, you've heard from the people. It's about at what point do we do a mandate? This would be number 4. We do newborn screening, we do clinical cancer trials, and we do diabetes. And I would suggest to you that those are all wonderful, wonderful mandates, and I'm happy we do them. I would suggest we add the 4th. I don't want to talk about the people, because you've heard from them. You've heard from every single one of them. You've talked to a lot of them. I want to talk about economics with the state. Because if indeed we end up paying some or all of this, there's 22 people identified in the state. That's $140,000. Roughly average that we would be paying. I'm not sure I really stressed enough yesterday what happens to an infant who is untreated with PKU. What happens is profound autism and profound mental retardation to the point that they would end up in a residential care facility for life, which costs the state millions and millions of dollars. I'd a whole lot rather pay $140,000, which we may or may not have to pay, than risk children's lives and risk that cost of millions of dollars. There's already 38 states that have this mandate, so they're kind of in the same boat that we are in terms of what's ACA going to do, what's ACA not going to do. I think it's time that we stand up for this very small group of people, and we look at it not just from the person side, but we look at it from the economics. It's good economics for our state to cover it early. We know treatment is absolutely essential. It's not that expensive for us. It's crippling for young families. So do what you will with the amendment. I'm very neutral on that, but I urge you to continue to support the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment. Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 145 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendments failed. We have a second amendment. Second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 145. Reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 145, second reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy. Delete the Perkins second reading amendment entirely and further amend as follows.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this goes into the same part of the bill as the previous amendment, but it does something very different. If you'll look on page 3, it says, for the purpose of this section, inherited enzymatic disorders includes, and then there's a laundry list. What this amendment does is, after includes, it comes in and says, and is limited to. So we're making it very explicit, Mr. President, that it's, these other disorders are the only inherited enzymatic disorders that we're covering with this mandate. The other laundry lists here are so rare that we don't know of any cases in the state, as we heard previously. My fear, Mr. President, is that as science advances, they're going to discover some other disease that is, in fact, an inherited enzymatic disorder and we'll suddenly find we have a much more expensive mandate than we thought, and this is a precaution. This amendment is a precaution against that. That there's some things out there we just don't know everything we might about the causes of them. It's possible one of them could be an enzymatic disorder that's inherited, and if you don't put in a precaution like this, we could suddenly have a much more extensive mandate than we thought we had. And that's all this amendment does, is it prevents that from occurring, Mr. President. I would urge its adoption.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I would also urge your adoption of this amendment. We tried to be very specific when drafting this bill, that it is very narrow and very narrowly focused. I think the good chairman has succeeded in even further narrowing it, and I would urge your support of the amendment and of the bill. Thank you.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 145 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's carried. House Bill 145, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 151, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 151, Uniform Trust Code Notice of Claim.
House Bill 151, having been read 2 separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 152, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 152, Vehicle Accident Reporting.
We have an amendment. Reading clerk will read in. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 152.
House Bill 152, second reading amendment number 1 to engross copy. Page 4, line 10, delete such, inserts the.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, again, not of great moment, desuchifying this bill.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 152 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's passed. House Bill 152. Having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 190, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 190, Public Defender Fee Schedule Indeceased Standard.
House Bill 190, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 197, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 197, Summary Procedure of Distribution of Decedent's Property.
House Bill 197, having been read 2 separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage. Do you have a consent list?
Thank you, Mr. President. We do have a consent list. When you take a look at the green sheet, on the consent list, we have removed House Bill 94, Immunization by Pharmacists. That's moved down to the regular list. The rest remain on this motion. So I would move the following third reading consent list. House Bill 24, Probate Amendments. House Bill 47, Confidential Student Disciplinary Hearing. House Bill 51, Probate Objections to Appointment. House Bill 133, Human Trafficking. House Bill 153, Representation of Children in Compact Proceedings. House Bill 154, Representation of Children in CHINS Proceedings. And House Bill 225, Transfer and Ownership of Livestock and Brands.
Would any of the senators like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Hearing none, the question is, having been read 3 separate times, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 24, Probate Amendments. House Bill 47, Confidential Student Disciplinary Hearing. House Bill 51, Probate, Objections to Appointment. House Bill 133, Human Trafficking. House Bill 153, Representation of Children in Compact Proceedings. House Bill 154, Representation of Children in CHINS Proceedings, and House Bill 225, Transfer of Ownership of Livestock and Brands. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
30 ayes. House Bill 24. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 24. 30 ayes. House Bill 47, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 47, 28 ayes, 2 noes. House Bill 51, are there any changes? Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 51, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 133, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 133, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 153, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 153, 30 ayes. House Bill 154, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 154, 30 ayes. House Bill 225, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 225, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bills 24, House Bill 47, House Bill 51, House Bill 133, House Bill 153, House Bill 154, and House Bill 225 have passed the Senate. House Bill 94, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 94, Immunization by Pharmacists, sponsored by Representative Reeder, an act relating to the Wyoming Pharmacy Act, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 94.
House Bill 94, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 9.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 94. And what I've done, and I'm sure most of you or maybe all of you have been receiving some of the same emails I have from pharmacists that do not feel like they're qualified, and for other reasons they don't have medical records and these kind of things that they are uncomfortable where they would be required to make these vaccinations. So I bring this amendment, and what I'm asking that any pharmacist would not be required to vaccinate individuals who are less than 13 years old. And also the second part of the amendment would be that no employer should discriminate against them. The one email that I've received, and I assume many of you have, said that then if they do not follow what the employer wants, well, they get discriminated on the hours they work and how many hours. And I think we've, in other bills we've done this year, we've left the option up to the individuals in some of these cases and particularly this one with health and concern of the person that feel like they may not be qualified, that we should at least leave, give them the option of not requiring them to do it. So I ask your support on the amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thanks, Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess with explanation of this, I think I know what the employer is, but when I first read this, I thought of a person who was an employer that may have also had children that was visiting the pharmacist, not necessarily the employer of a pharmacist. And so I think there's maybe a little confusion in that. Probably would never rise to the occasion that a pharmacist would say that discrimination existed, but nonetheless, I think there's some confusion maybe the way it's written.
Discussions, Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, I understand the concerns, and they're valid concerns, but Mr. President, I think this is an unworkable approach, and the reason I think that is this is not a moral issue that is precluding somebody from wanting to give this vaccination. It really is an issue of skill at that point, whether or not an individual has the skill at their job to be comfortable providing a service that the employer would want to administer. And it's perfectly reasonable to not hire somebody because they don't have a skill that you want to make available as a service through your pharmacy. So while I certainly understand and feel for the folks that have written to us saying that they're worried about this and that they would be personally concerned, I think it's beholden upon them to go get the additional training to be comfortable in administering child vaccinations at that point. That's the solution, Mr. President. So I'm going to be against this amendment. I hope the body is as well.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, and further complication on this, the testimony we had in committee is that the recent pharmacy graduates have pretty much all had training here. I don't think our pharmacy school requires it. I think it's an elective, but I think that virtually all the students are taking it, is what we heard. And so they're perfectly comfortable with administering this. With the older pharmacists, the testimony was that you can go back to school. It's a relatively short course. Other states, it's not proved a barrier to get the older pharmacists that did not receive the adequate training to get them through a short course and bring them up to speed. And that's how employers in other states have handled this, Mr. President. So it's reasonable that your older pharmacists who did not get the training when they went through school would be uncomfortable, but the testimony was it's relatively simple to remedy that fault. And I can see where if an organization was wanting to give those, they would say to the pharmacist, you've got to get that kind of training. Well, does that fall under the language of this amendment or not? That would be the requirement, that they go get the training, because, Mr. President, once they've had the training, we think they're likely to be perfectly comfortable doing it. It's just a matter of professional training. If they try it without that professional training, I think there may be an issue they'd be beyond the scope of their practice because they were doing something they weren't trained for. So I'm not sure this amendment solves the problem. I think the private marketplace is likely to solve the problem by saying if you want to work here, if we're going to do these immunizations, you've got to get that extra training. And I don't think that is specifically covered by this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. President, I'm on and for the amendment. There are pharmacists who do not want to do this because they don't have the training, and we talk about getting the training. The training that some could receive is a one-day training. That doesn't help them when they have complications and all the things that can happen with these. And I like the 13 years because at 13 years, you're probably not getting any complications. The,
the child has already had those immunizations and not, you know, what the reactions are. So the age helps. It helps also about the discrimination with a pharmacist that does not want to do this. Then he doesn't have to do it, and somebody else in the pharmacy can, or they can't do it. So I like the amendment. I hope you pass it. Thank you.
Discussion? Senator Hines, for your second time.
Mr. President, to answer one, this email, and I think everybody's name is on it, this person graduated in 2008, so I wouldn't call it an old pharmacist if they graduated in 2008. I personally know someone that I heard from that will be graduating in May of this year and said they did not have the training currently. So I don't think the pharmacy school at the university in Wyoming anyway is providing this. They said the only training this one person received was a weekend crash course. So I don't think that enough. And I don't think we normally make requirements for different jobs, different professions, and expect that anyone in that profession to go out and get training later. So I think this is a reasonable our amendment to ask them, to give them the choice. We done it, as you recall, just last week on another bill we had here that dealt with another subject that wasn't near as serious as giving shots. And we gave those individuals the option of not confirming to what the basic of the bill was. So I think it's worthy of giving it a try, and I ask your support.
Question is, shall second reading or third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 94 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is passed. Vision has been called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Amendment's passed. House Bill 94, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines? Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
House Bill 94, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 94 has passed the Senate. House Bill 187, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 187, campaign finance, sponsored by Representative Stubson, an act relating to campaign finance reporting. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. Reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 187.
House Bill 187, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 5.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I You know, and it just occurred to me that, and I apologize for this, I forgot to run this amendment by the sponsor, visit him about that. So I apologize for that in advance. Mr. Chairman, I'd move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 187. It's a fairly easy amendment. What we did is, Mr. President, it goes through and in the bill on page two, we increased, used to be the campaign contribution was increased from $1,000 to $2,500. Mr. Chairman, we had a discussion about freedom of speech and other things, and what I did here is I thought, you know, maybe this would give us twice as much freedom. So I went through and I basically increased the rest of the amounts by doubled the rest of the amounts, with the exception of one other place on page three where it had $1,000. I thought what was sauce for the goose ought to be sauce for the gander and raised that to $2,500 as well. We talked about that the other day. There was discussion about the U.S. Supreme Court case on freedom of speech and whether or not this affects speech. It certainly is speech. And I don't know if this is the right numbers. I don't know if these are the wrong numbers. I don't know if this makes the bill comply with the United States Supreme Court. But I do know that, you know, if you can have so much speech for $1,000, you can have some more speech for $2,500.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Hines.
Mr. President, the original sponsors of these of this bill was trying to encourage more individuals to donate to candidates rather than PAC committees, and their ideas was to try to limit some of that giving in the hopes that individuals would step up and more or less give candidates direct contributions. And this increases it as far as freedom of speech. Somewhere in all these papers I collected from the staff, the U.S. Supreme Court order, and it says very specifically in that none of that court order had anything to do with limiting campaign contributions amount. So it's on this amendment, you go back to $50,000 on PACs. That certainly hard for individuals if you have a PAC that's running against you and you're trying to counter the expenses that you have to do to buy ads and campaign. Well, it's pretty tough to get $50,000 from individuals in Wyoming. So, however you feel, that I really don't think this higher number is necessary.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the campaign decision or the Supreme Court's decision was a decision in 2010, and it was a decision in Citizens United, which struck down limits on independent campaign spending by corporations and unions. Indeed, that's nothing to do with the individual candidates in that one there, but in that one they equated free speech to money, that they were essentially the same, that if you limited the money to a contribution or the contributions, then you essentially limited free speech. But in 2006, Mr. President, in Randall versus Sorrell, the Supreme Court struck down Vermont's contribution limits that at that time they were the lowest in the nation as unconstitutional. And that was individual and political parties were not allowed to contribute more than $400 to a candidate for statewide office over a two-year election cycle, including primaries. So, Mr. President, it's clear that the Supreme Court has basically said that money is free speech, and that's what the U.S. Supreme Court has said. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think this amendment goes a long ways toward providing a free speech to the folks that want to say something by contributing to individual candidates.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, that was an interesting summary of Citizens United. Citizens United does not put any conditions or limitations on the amount of money that may be contributed to a candidate or eliminate the possibility of putting those limitations on. The federal government still limits campaign contributions to federal campaigns. Nothing changed as a result of Citizens United. What Citizens United did was remove a restriction on corporations from spending on their own behalf, not through contributions, but using their own voice, and recognized that a corporation had free speech, in the same way that nobody in this room would be limited in any way of spending as much money as we would want to espouse our own views. But we still are limited in giving campaign contributions to federal candidates based on the Federal Elections Commission's regulations and federal law. So there's a little bit of a mismatch there. There's nothing that the Supreme Court has ruled that says that the limits that we're putting in place right now would be undue restrictions on free speech. What couldn't be done would be to say that you as individuals could not spend your own money to voice your own opinions. So we can limit campaign contributions. That's well established through Supreme Court law. We cannot limit individuals' own personal expressions, whether they're a true individual or a corporation. That's also well established. There's nothing unconstitutional about this bill either way. And there's no reason we would have to support this amendment. I'm personally going to be against the amendment, but these restrictions are being mischaracterized based on Supreme Court decisions. I want to make it perfectly clear what the Supreme Court decided, and I hope the body understands that, Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, I don't want to dip my toe into the constitutionality nor the Supreme Court decisions or anything, but history has shown us, recent history has shown us, every time Congress goes to enact a contribution limits, they always find loopholes around it, whether it's PACs, whether it's 527s, whatever it is. And the fact of the matter is, the Supreme Court has drawn a line equating money and campaign donations with freedom of speech. Now, these limits here are for state races in the state of Wyoming. And in all due respect to the good senator from the Ivory Tower, it is perfectly constitutional, perfectly legal. But the fact of the matter is, if you're running for election or you're running for re-election and the local press or the state press is against you, it's going to cost you a lot more money to try and get your message out. And you may not personally have the money to do it, but there may be enough people who believe in you to agree with your message and therefore give you the money. I think that I absolutely agree with the sponsor of this amendment. More money here, the higher the caps, more freedom. I think that it also, raising the caps, also matches inflation over the last number of years. So we're not getting as much bang for the $1,000 that we were getting 5-8 years ago. I think just for inflation's sake, for economic sake, we should pass this amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, and I agree with that last point, and I'm trying to think when was the last time some of these figures were updated, and I was looking at page 3, line 15, the two-year limitation, which I suspect is being violated by some people. And I think I was involved as a very junior intern in a statewide campaign in the 1960s. And I think that was the limitation at that point. I think, and I wish I, Mr. Chairman, I wish I trusted my memory a little better, but it's been a long time since that figure was changed. And the need to update these, I think, is clear. Frankly, from what I've seen in state legislative races, I don't think this is going to make a lot of difference. But in a statewide campaign, I think it would make quite a bit of difference. And I think we do need to recognize that inflation has destroyed the value of the old limitations we have had. So I think this good amendment, I urge its adoption.
Senator Meyer for a second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I want to, you know, kind of look at this in the whole as far as this campaign finance here. If you look at page 2, lines 8 through 10, it says, except as otherwise provided in this section, no individual other than the candidate or the candidate's immediate family shall contribute directly or indirectly. And essentially what that says, Mr. President, is that you know, if you happen to be wealthy by any means, either by your hard work or the sweat of your brow or you're born with the silver spoon, that qualifies you for as much free speech as you and your family can possibly contribute. And, folks, it's an uneven playing field because, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, in this state that have the ability to represent the state on a statewide level that necessarily don't meet those requirements. And what this amendment does is help level that playing field. It helps level that playing field. It says that more people will have the opportunity to represent the people of Wyoming. And it's a good amendment, Mr. President.
Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. President, this amendment, on and for the amendment, this amendment only deals with non-statewide political office. Those numbers aren't very good for statewide offices. 50,000 won't do any statewide offices. But this amendment only deals with non-statewide. Page 2 is statewide description. Page 3 is non-statewide, and that's what we're dealing with. But what the maker is doing is upping the non-statewide, and I agree with that. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I guess what I'm hearing, and I'm speaking against the amendment, but I guess the more money you have, the more free speech you get. And I really don't think that's what the idea of free speech is all about. But this is kind of the argument I'm hearing. If you got more money, you get more free speech.
Senator Perkins, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just really briefly, let's make sure we know what the amendment does. Mr. President, on the first one on page 3, line 5, what we're doing is you're increasing from $1,000 to $2,500. These are candidates for non-statewide. These are for a candidate for a non-statewide political office. That's what that does. Page 3, line 15. Is the total, it updates the total amount of total political contributions for any two-year period consisting of a general election year and the preceding calendar year. That is just total political contributions by anyone. That the current amount is $25,000. The amendment would raise it to $50,000. We're putting the limit on, you know, telling people how much money they can spend altogether. On page 4, on at the bottom of page 4 and top of page 5, you're increasing those amounts. The first one is for deleting $5,000, increasing $10,000. That's for a statewide political office. And then the second one is increasing from $2,000 to $4,000 for any candidate for other political office. So any other office other than political, so it'd be a non-statewide office. And so that's what it does. I think there's been good discussion for and against, and everybody's got an opinion on this one. But ultimately, Mr. Chairman, I'd urge your favorable consideration, both in inflation and the fact of the matter is, at this day and age, in political campaigns, whether they be grassroots or whether they be ones for actual individuals, it does cost to get your message out.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 187 pass? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's passed. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 187. The reading clerk will read in the amendment.
House Bill 187, third reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 5.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Mr. President, maybe we'll have a little fun on this one. I'm glad the First Amendment passed. Mr. President, this essentially on page 2 and page 3 deletes all that language and has this restriction on political campaign contributions. It basically says
need
that,
to move the amendment.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. President. I apologize. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 187. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, essentially we go in and we say that that nobody can spend more than the individual wishes to contribute in the exercise of that person's rights under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution and Article 1, Section 20 of the Wyoming Constitution. Mr. President, I'll briefly read the Article 20. It says, freedom of speech and press, libel, truth, or defense. Every person may speak freely, write, and publish on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right, and in all trials for libel, both civil and criminal, the truth, when published with good intent and for justifiable ends, shall be a sufficient defense, the jury having the right to determine the facts and the law under the direction of the court. So, Mr. President, when you contribute to a campaign, you're going to have to believe in that person because he's going to have to tell the truth or you could be liable, Mr. President. But it does allow you to contribute as much as what you wish to contribute in your exercise of your free speech through the candidate.
Discussion on the amendment. Question has been called. All those in favor of second or third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 187, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Amendment's failed. Third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 187. The reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 187, third reading amendment number 3 to engross copy. Page 6, lines 13 through 19, delete new language.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 187. Ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, we go in and we delete the new languages on page 6, lines 13 through 19. Mr. President, that's essentially deleting the candidate's campaign committee. We had a lot of discussion on the difficulty of filing, who's in the candidate's campaign committee, and whether or not those folks should be subjected to a misdemeanor punishable up to 1 year. I think if we have this language in the bill, it's certainly going to have a chilling effect on who wants to be on a campaign committee if they're going to be subject to imprisonment of up to 1 year in the compliance with this section, Mr. President. And so that's the reason I bring this amendment. I think it adds balance to the bill, keeps it in essentially the same place as what the language is today in today's statute, and would hope for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. Question is, third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 187 pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's failed.
Division.
Division has been called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Amendments failed. House Bill 187, having been read 3 separate times. Question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Get a cookie for that one.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
By your vote, House Bill 187, having received the majority, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 187 has passed the Senate. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce the Senate to a group of students who come from a school district who repetitively places in the top five in reading, writing, and math. And they do this year after year. This is Lincoln County School District number 2, the Star Valley students. Would you please welcome them to the Senate? Would you please stand up?
Well, welcome to the Senate. I hope you enjoyed your bus ride. Okay. House Bill 215, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 215, State Investments for a Public Purpose, sponsored by Representative Patton, an act relating to state investments, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. Reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 215.
House Bill 215, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 1.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 215. Mr. President, what this amendment does, if you look at the bill, it originally had $600 million set aside for, or $200 million, $600 million set aside for industrial development bonds, IDBs. It was reduced to $200, and then for the total amount that could be invested, was it $1 billion, it was reduced to $500 million. And, Mr. President, the purpose of this is just to bring parity. There are some projects out there that are looking to utilize this type of funding for some very important needs in Wyoming. And if you're going to cut one by half, you do the other one by a third. This brings parity. And so the purpose is to take the $200 million up to $300 million and then the $500 million up to $600 million, Mr. President. I think that, you know, these are really important things. You may recall a couple of years ago when we had a bill that passed this body and the other body became law that took it up to the $600 million and the $1 billion levels. And this is just something that was just put into place, like I say, a couple of years ago. Mr. President, I'm not sure why we even need to reduce it at all, considering that we made that decision a couple of years ago to increase it. And as I remember the debate on that in the Senate, I think it was brought by a former colleague of ours from Sweetwater County. There were some potential projects that were large in size, and clearly the security and the collateral was there to allow them to proceed, and this gave them a tool to look at in terms of trying to expand and spend capital to produce product in our state. So I would ask your favorable consideration on this third reading amendment number 1.
Is there any discussions? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask the Senate to resist this amendment, Mr. President. Really, the whole purpose of the bill is to put a damper on this whole system of legislatively derived investments until some point where we can have some rules in place to kind of put a framework to it. Mr. Chairman, lots going on all of a sudden, where for years this has lain fairly dormant. The state treasurer's own information shows that, we don't have any industrial development bonds issued now. There's no real protocol figured out how to do it. And then all of a sudden we're hearing that hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be going out imminently. Mr. Chairman, the treasurer is asking for rulemaking. He's asking for the the size of the various programs to be brought down to a more manageable level. And once the rulemaking is in place and we look at some of the policies with respect to this, maybe we can open it back up. But so far, not only has it been used, but all of a sudden we have just a huge amount of rock and roll, I guess, Mr. Chairman, with low interest rates and no personal guarantees, and it's just going on and on and on. And, you know, the purpose of this bill is to lower these limits, but most importantly, to have a chance to put in rules and regulations. I would suggest we really do need to let the bill proceed as it was, spend about a year getting a handle on this before we Katie bar the door.
Senator Schiffer.
President, I too rise in opposition to this amendment for the reason stated, but also until we lay out at least a roadmap or some parameters on these legislative designated investments, sooner or later what happens, and I don't know if the demand's out there or not, knowing some of the projects, they're a long way away, years from now, if at all. But we need to look at the rulemaking, and really what we're getting at is, how do you balance these things? Because if we don't go forward with some sort of balance, at some point it's going to become a choice, whoever gets in the door first, between, for example, an ag loan and an industrial loan, or an ag loan and a clean water loan. Because we haven't organized how we're going to shape that portfolio. And that's what we need to do. Then we can come back and look at the limits. Does this have really practical implications? My second point is it does. It really does, particularly for the legislature. The yield on the portfolio, somewhere around 11%, give or take, depending how many, the yield on these types of loans is going to be about 4.25%. In other words, the flow of money, the third biggest revenue stream for our general fund, unless we manage these properly, will be depleted from 11% to 4.25%. That's a big hit for future generations of legislators. We need to approach this cautiously. I urge you, leave the ceiling right where they're at. Let's take a look at it. We'll be back in session long before any of those proposed industrial bonds even are written, quite frankly. They just don't move that fast. So I urge you to resist this amendment.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and for it, I will tell you that there is one in the pipeline. It's in my county. It's on the front of the commissioners right now. It's coming. It involves 60 jobs in Cook County, and it'll involve a lot more money coming back in terms of uranium royalties to the state of Wyoming. These are important. They do matter. And there is some in the pipeline. I would encourage you to go ahead and support this amendment and come through. There's some that are quite close coming.
Senator Meyer.
On and for the amendment. Now, folks, if you look at the asset allocation on this, is that these are bonds. And if you look at the long-term bond return for treasuries or for other bonds, it's a lot lower than 4.2%. So from the perspective of our legislative designated investments, they're actually returning more than the other fixed asset classes that we have in the portfolio. So I think to say that that everything is going to go down to 4.2%, you're really looking at the fixed asset classes that you need to compare with. So because you got to compare apples with apples, and orangutans with orangutans, I guess. So Mr. President, on and for the amendment, I think that this does reduce it quite a little bit. From where the tops were, the $600 million and the $1 billion went in there specifically for the possibility of the Wyoming Infrastructure Development Authority, because it costs you about $1 million a mile for those things. They've done some up in that Campbell County area. There may be a little bit more maybe down in the Colorado, but those are years away on the stuff that will happen probably down in Colorado or someplace else to transport coal by wire. But, Mr. President, I think this is a good compromise. You're knocking these things in half, and it does put some sideboards on that we can live with.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against this amendment, folks, I've asked this bill to be laid back and tried to go back and review what brought us here, why we're here, and what's happening in this program. And frankly, it's a program developed over years where multiple memories, people having different ideas, and we've created a program, frankly, that is neither sustainable or appropriate or transparent. And the way it works now, as near as I can tell, in fact, I sort of thought that the appropriate motion or amendment would be a moratorium on any further use of these dollars until we get back in and really look at an interim study. But here's, near as I can tell, here's what's happening. In many instances, we gave large volume of dollars available for investment in bonds. Now, there are programs out there where we said the state can be the bond issuer, but not the investor. They could be the issuing authority, but the bonds wouldn't be invested by the state treasurer, and our resources, our permanent mineral trust fund, our money is just simply not at issue. Then, as I recall, on occasion that we saw a large project, a transmission line that might result in the construction of a $1 billion coal plant, or a pipeline that might generate $200 million a year of revenues and tax revenues to the state. We saw these magnificent projects that we thought, you know, under the right circumstances, maybe we ought to be an investor of these projects if we could get a game-changing technology. Well, what's happening now is it's become a candy jar for people that know the treasurer and have access. There's no transparency. You hear the whisper, well, maybe your buddy over here or maybe your buddy over here has got a loan application. Folks from the city of Casper want to build a facility downtown. And the loan gets recommended. I submit to you that it's hard to even identify that as an appropriate investment. Then it goes to the business council, and they strip off all the personal guarantees. So it's free money. Why do they care? It's not their money. It's the state of Wyoming's money. And that's part of the issue here is you have no transparency. You don't know what these loans are. They're not brought to your attention. If you wanted to go down and talk to the treasurer, they'd put you first, and they said, well, you know, there's this and this going on. And then you want to know what your rate of return is? Well, you go in, and the conversation goes, well, Mr. Treasurer, what kind of interest rates you're getting? Well, we don't count our permanent or our return on equities, but our fixed income is, you know, last year we got 2%. Well, I'll double that. I'll give you 4%. Without going back and realizing that our overall rate of return might be 10 or 11%. And more importantly, if these projects were bankable, they don't need to go downstairs. They're high-risk, non-bankable projects. There's no board of directors. There's no loan committee. There's no identification party, who the parties are, what's going on, relationships. And we hear that there are at least two projects. You heard one up that uranium projects, maybe others, and getting sweetheart deals that, if they're bankable, they'd be out getting them. And those weren't to build a nuclear power plant. That's what we were looking for. They're mining. Historically, we've never gone out and paid for mining operations to develop their mining operations. Mine operations generally support themselves. So we have this program now with interest rates that are undisclosed, And here we go back to our constituents, and we've been telling them that the permanent mineral trust fund is a permanent investment to generate revenue, and we're responsible for getting our highest rates of return, except for when there are friends, colleagues, neighbors, or folks that would prefer to have a low interest rate, 2 to 4%, on large volumes of money. So they don't have to go get equity investors. They don't have, you don't need equity investors if you can get those kind of rates. They don't have to go to the market. You look at the ag loans, what we did historically there, we always said you had to have a 50% loan to value ratio. We have a bad loan account. So if there's an ag loan that is not serviced, we have a reserve to go in. We have no such protection. We've never built a plan to accommodate that kind of lending risk. And we're not told what the risk levels are. We're not told, and if a banker came in and said, this is a brand new project, this is the loan to value ratio is X. I have another question. If we had to foreclose on this, what's our environmental liability? You can't answer these questions because it's not transparent. You don't know what they are. But these programs were originally designed to secure things like power plants, nuclear power plants, coal plants, to do things that were extraordinary. And now we're paying for just the cost of building mining operations. And every mine in the state would say, hey, you know, this would be great. Let's go down and develop our mining costs. We'll start buying our equipment at 4%. This program needs to be looked at. It needs to be revamped. It needs to be made transparent. And I urge you to oppose the amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, yeas and nays, please.
I think it requires it.
Mr. President, I won't attempt to match the eloquence of the previous speaker, with whom I very much agree. I would just observe to the Senate that the state is not good at the commercial banking business, and that some of the votes I've made here that have stood the test of time best have been against some of the specific programs that you can get into under this particular set of circumstances. And I think we're wise to limit the amount of money.
Senator Meyer for a second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, Mr. President, some of the things that the good majority floor leader brought up were definitely concerns of the Treasurer. And before this bill was even brought up, we had several long discussions about what we can do in the Treasurer's office to develop protocols to protect the corpus and to make these programs transparent, to put in place the correct lending ratios and asset ratios that needed to be in place to protect the corpus. And, Mr. President, that's what the rules are going to be that the Treasurer is going to be to adopt. I'm sure that he'd welcome anybody's input to help make those rules more transparent, to make sure that we do protect the corpus and address many of the issues and concerns I think that everyone has on this floor. However, the programs have been successful in the past. The loans have been successful in the past. The rate of return is better than our fixed rate of return. And we need to have a reasonable amount of funds available to proceed as we have in the past, only under more scrutiny, which this bill has, in the rules and the regulations that's going to be developed by the Treasurer. And so I'm sure that he'll invite anybody that wants to come in his office and help him develop those rules and develop that criteria. So we have a better comfort level, and frankly that we have a program that we know will not jeopardize the corpus.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess on for the amendment, and I'll go ahead and probably, Mr. President, I've got a few things to say, but I'm probably going to declare conflict on this particular bill because I'm involved in one of these things right now. But just to go back, should the program be looked at? Yes, I agree with that. In fact, I have made recommendations that one of the select committees do that. I'm trying to work on that and have visited with some leadership and have to visit with some more about doing that because I think it's appropriate to do that. But there are some. I've been going through this process under this for about it's been the better part of 2 years, and it's getting near potential. It's getting near completion. But I can tell you that it's not. I can tell you that what's happened, and give you my perspective on it, having gone through it, is that this is it's controlled mostly by Section 9-4-715 Wyoming statutes. In particular, subparagraph M is a long paragraph that anybody who goes through this is going to become very familiar. But ultimately what happens is it sets how you do this. And these are industrial development bonds that are available. And there's a number of things that are in here. But the investment is to finance the purchase or cost of acquisition land, rights of way, or construction of buildings to do improvements, enhancements, things like that. They have to be for commercial enterprises. They have to be for you have to demonstrate that you've got you're doing economic development, that you're either going to promote the use of local minerals, of local resources, local employment, things like that. The owner has to have demonstrate at least a 25% equity contribution into the project. When you go through it, you go through the Wyoming Business Council administers it. You have at least one public hearing that's held by the Wyoming Business Council. You have to present that. They make their decision and come back. Once you go through that process, once Wyoming Business Council makes a recommendation, it goes to the governor, who then reviews it with the Attorney General's office, who goes through and reviews that. The governor then either has to approve that project or not approve that project. If he approves that project, then it goes to the treasurer's office for the consideration of the treasurer, whether or not the treasurer will invest in the bonds. And there is a negotiation that happens with respect to interest rates, and it is not on the total return, but is generally on fixed rates of return. It is there, and generally it's a little bit above what the treasurers is generally getting for bonds. In talking with the treasurer, I've talked to the treasurer multiple times about this during the session, just in general. About this, because I'm concerned about what is the right number. Should it be more? Should it be less? Are these too high? Are these the right proportions? And ultimately, one of the bill sponsors thinks that, you know, we ought to rein this in some degree. Well, maybe we should, but the other side of that is maybe we shouldn't. Ultimately, it needs to be taken a hard look at. But I can tell you that what the treasurer is interested in is in the rulemaking. The treasurer wants to make sure that whoever comes to his office, that everybody knows ahead of time exactly what rules that are going to apply. Now, I don't think the treasurer has particular opinions about whether these numbers should be high, low, or right where they're at. But he wants to make sure that it's a fair process and anybody comes in can expect the same treatment and the same considerations. Should we look at it? Yes. I don't think this amendment hurts or helps, but what we're doing right now is we are, Mr. President, simply pulling numbers out of the air. We need to take a good look at this at the interim, and I would note that I'm going to declare a conflict on this vote. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before the sponsor takes his second time, Mr. President, we're really not that good at doing this. We need to think about it a bit. You know, government is not the same thing as private companies. And private companies have more information than we have, Mr. President. When they come in to get a loan, they don't tell us everything. And we get kind of caught up. We become very enthusiastic about the possibilities of the wonderful things that this can do for our state. But it's really not our money that we're dealing with, Mr. President. It's the people's money. We have to be careful with the people's money. And that's what this bill is about, is saying, we're kind of getting a little wild here. We need to slow down. We need an interim study. And we need to do that this year. We need to take a look at this. We need to let the treasurer put forward rules and regulations and think about this. We definitely don't, we cannot stand here and say this program doesn't cost us anything because it truly does. When we stand here and say things like, we make slightly more than we make in terms of the rest of our portfolio of fixed income, there is no connection to that statement whatsoever to reality. Because the first thing, these are risky investments. Our fixed income portfolio, which is part of our overall portfolio, are, for the most part, government-backed securities, Mr. President. AAA, bluest of the blue. These investments aren't. Do you believe investing in a hotel in Casper where there's no personal guarantees on the notes is a blue ribbon investment equal to a treasury bond? No way. And what do we forgo, Mr. President? When we tie up our money for these kinds of investments, we can't have a balanced portfolio with equities and good securities that yields us higher rates of return. Perhaps, you know, on balance, overall rate of return, much higher than we give up with these kind of investments. And it's just, it leads to shenanigans, Mr. President. Crony capitalism. What's our job? I thought government and business is supposed to be separate. This puts balance. This bill's all about balance and gives us time to think about the policies here. So please resist the amendment.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendments, and I realize we need balance, and this is a good piece of legislation to get us there. I think the essence of the legislation, I believe everybody in the room seems to be on the same page, on page 2, lines 6 through 8. It's just the financial figures that we're concerned about at this point. What this is about is the concept of whether or not we want to be investing our money, and we have a lot of savings sitting around in permanent funds and temporary funds. Do we want that to be invested in Wall Street, places all over the world? Or do we want to be having an option, the availability of programs that allow us to invest that money in the state of Wyoming? This is one of those programs. I don't think there's anybody who's advocating to not do the due diligence and not make sure we have a rigorous process to ensure that it is low risk. That's why we're not running these things frequently at this point. We've all heard about proposals, and most of those proposals have been shot down over the last few years because they've been deemed too high of risk. But making sure that we have an instrument in place that allows us to recognize a low-risk prospect that is in the best interest of the state of Wyoming in building our diverse economy and making sure that we're investing in the future of energy or information technology or wherever it might be in the state of Wyoming, we need tools to do that. This provides us that type of tool. We recognize that a lot of these projects are major projects that require substantial sums of money. That's why we need these large caps. We had a great discussion 2 years ago when we raised the cap, the total cap, up to $1 billion and the individual cap up to the $600 million where it stands right now, recognizing there might be some major projects. Now, that said, Mr. President, absolutely. We need to study this. We need to make sure the rules and regulations are sound, that the treasurer has the ability to implement solid rules and regulations that this body concurs with. I don't think there'd be anybody here who'd be averse to having an interim study to further look into this. But to say that we're better off as a state investing in corporations that are in other states so that they can grow instead of businesses and economic development in the state of Wyoming just because we consider those to be safer does not seem to be a logical connection to me at this point. We need to make sure that we're investing in the future of Wyoming with our funds to the best of our ability. This is a program that does that. It might need some refining, but I'd support the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. Folks, we have the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund that we've collected, and it's a permanent mineral trust fund. And we diversify those investments to reach out outside the state of Wyoming and across the world to pick very secure, good investments to make sure that we have a broad spectrum of revenues that come in. And absolutely, we reach outside the state because what we're trying to do is buffer our accounts, our oil and gas, and make sure that when oil and gas is down, we have other revenues. That was the pledge. That's why we recreated the account. Don't be taken in by this argument that somehow investing in Wall Street or something else is a bad thing. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to diversify our sources of revenue. But what we're trying to do is go out and doing investment-grade investments, whether they be bonds, whether they be equities, but they're investment grades with low risk and with high upside risk. We've also created Cheyenne Capital for venture capital, and we could put more money in the venture capital. And what's happening here, our folks are looking for a form of venture capital, but they don't want to go to the venture capital route because why? If it was a loan, they might have to get a convertible to equity. They'd lose some of their equity. They might have to pay a higher interest rate because venture capitalists base their rates based upon the risk involved. Rather, these folks who are coming in here and said, we like the candy jar. We like the fixed income, 2 to 4%, without recognition of our risks that a banker or a third-party venture capitalist would require. We can create venture capital programs. We know exactly how to do it. We just put more money in. We could take 1.5% of our, if we decided these were important, take it a diversion 1 year out of the permanent mineral trust fund and put it in another account and say, this is for our business growth account, and we'll put it at risk. But it's crazy to be talking about, well, we're here to protect our corpus. Here we were this year appropriating money for Jamestown because we made it we gave a loan that they couldn't pay back. The Wyoming Territorial Prison, one of the first things I was called and asked to do was to pay off the corpus because it was a loan that people knew from day one would never get paid. There's no transparency. We don't know what they are. But what we do know, it's not bringing in a transmission line that's going to build a power plant. It's not going to build a nuclear power plant. The things that we were looking for that were just would rock your socks off, and we said, okay, we're going to do this. And we're talking about a fifth of your permanent mineral trust fund. If we want to get in the venture capital business, we know how to do it. We have the resources to do it. And what we're doing here is giving, in essence, venture capital for high-risk things at a low interest rate. And if that weren't the case, these projects would have been bankable, and they wouldn't have come to us in the first instance.
Sponsors for a second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've had some good discussion on this, but all my experience in the legislature, usually when you bring a bill to the body like this, it's because there are problems. Now, this has been on our books for a while. This isn't anything new. All that happened a couple of years ago is we increased the value. This is not some new program. This is not something we just dreamed up. This is not something that's smoke and mirrors or candy jar that we're looking at. This is what we've had on our books and we've been looking at for a lot of years. I will tell you, at least from the information I have, that we have one like this out in the industry right now. One bond. Is it performing? Yes. You want to know what the interest rate is? It's about 6.5%. It's very well secured. It's by an A-rated company that's on, I believe, the New York Stock Exchange. This is the only loan out there that I know of that deals with this particular language. So where are all the smoke and mirrors? Where are the black helicopters? Where are all the promoters lined up outside our door to come in here and expect us to give them all this money for low interest rate? I haven't seen them. My colleague from Laramie County, or from Albany County, if he knows where they are, tell me. I will also tell you that And I usually don't deal with government loans for a lot of reasons. I'm in the private sector. That's the place to be. But there are places where they do work. Should we have personal guarantees? Absolutely. Should we have rules for the treasurer to be implement what he wants to do? Absolutely. But we already do have a couple of very important people that makes this decision. One's called the state treasurer. One's called the governor. I haven't seen people down in the governor's office in their black striped suits from New York City coming out here to get a bunch of money from the state because we're stupid. We're not stupid. We're one of the best run states in the country. We're not going to give this money away. We're talking about building things in our state for our state. I think to take these limits up to this amount is a good idea. If you want to look at this program and have an interim study, although we only have one loan out there to see if it's performing, let's do it. If you want to build some more sideboards, that's fine. Let's do it. But let's don't talk about putting limits on a bill that we don't even know why it's even here in the first place, other than we want rules. And that's fine. If you really look at this bill and the person that drafted it, why did you take the legislator out of the mix for over $100 million? And, Mr. President, if you allow me the latitude to speak to that, although there's another amendment coming up, you took us out of the equation. What kind of a bill is that? I would ask the sponsors, where is your heads at? You take the legislature out of the process, you're going to give $100 million up to billion to two people? That's why we have us in there. This bill repeals that. I think this bill is ill thought. I don't think we need it. I think it's working fine. I would suggest we raise the limit to this amount. We actually should go back to where the bill was originally intended, and let's get on with this program. There's not smoke and mirrors. It's a good deal for Wyoming. It brings people in here. We have opportunities that it provides for us. I would ask you to support this amendment.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Nope.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Contra.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 19 ayes, 10 noes, 1 conflict.
Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 215 is passed. There was another amendment. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 215. The reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 215, third reading amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 215 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, this amendment simply strikes the repealer. If you look at page 3, we've got statute 94715M, Romanet 7, that is repealed as part of the legislation. When you go into statute to look and see what that is, which I happened to do the other day, that's the clause that indicates that no investment in excess of $100 million shall be made under this subsection in bonds for any one project without specific legislative authorization. That was what the good Vice President was alluding to a moment ago. For some reason, the drafters of this legislation chose to remove the requirement that we as a body have to approve any project with a price tag over $100 million. I don't know what led them to think that was a particularly good idea, but I believe this body should have oversight on large projects, any project over $100 million, as we currently do. So whether you like this IDB system or not, I hope the entire body will support the fact that we at least need to be looking at the projects if they come through, and I'd ask for favorable consideration on the amendment.
In your case.
Mr. President, I agree. I ask everybody to vote aye.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 215 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendments passed. We have another amendment, third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 215. Reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 215, third reading amendment number 3 to engross copy. Delete the B-belt. Third reading amendment.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, Mr. President, we've had some great discussion. I think we've reached a compromise. I'm going to withdraw this amendment.
All right. Without objection, this amendment's withdrawn. House Bill 215. Having been read three Senator Nicholas.
Bill.
On the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't think any of us believe that we shouldn't do everything we can to enhance our economic development. It is a tough decision when we began to reach into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, which has a specific purpose to balance out revenues for our general fund and begin to use it for economic development, particularly those that have projects that have risk. And one of the challenges that just came is well, I only know of one loan that existed, and it was a good loan to a company that could have borrowed the money on the stock exchange. I want to speak to that. We created my recollection, it was either the Pipeline Authority, but I think it was the Infrastructure Authority. And originally what we did is gave them an opportunity to go out and issue industrial development revenue bonds where they would be the issuing authority. There would be no risk to the state of Wyoming because all they were doing is the bond issuing authority. And the hope was that there would be tax-free bond availability for these industrial revenue bonds. Congress never provided the tax-free incentive, so there was no purpose in ever issuing bonds. But the idea both in the beginning for both the Pipeline Authority and the Infrastructure Authority was that they would go out, they would issue bonds where the credit of the state was not at issue, and then they would, by being the issuing authority, they would receive a fee, and that fee would help pay for their way, and then they would not have to rely on the general fund to subsidize themselves or to pay themselves. Those vehicles, those bonding techniques have expired, and we're now paying those agencies out of our general fund because we think they're valuable. With respect to the particular bond at issue, the one that's issued, it was a power generator in the state of Wyoming. And they had every capacity and ability to go out and get, and these interest rates might be wrong, but they're close. Going rate was about 6.5%, and they had every opportunity to go out and borrow 6.5% money on the market. And what happened in this instance is the Infrastructure Authority said, hey, we'll issue bonds. The Treasurer will sell them to us for 5.5%. And then we'll relend it to you for 6.5%, and then we get a 1% differential to help pay our cost of operations. Came in, the deal was done. It never had any legislative oversight. It arrived in the Appropriations Committee, and they were touting it as a success. And as your representative on the Appropriations Committee, I said, what are you talking about success? We're making more than 6.5% on our investments in the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. So all that happened is we gave you a legislative designated investment below market. You reloaned it at market value, so sure, the power generator is going to pay the bill, but that 1% differential, you're now saying, hey, this is great. I just got a revenue source off of these funds that should have gone to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, then to the general fund, and I don't have to go through the budget process. I just got my own little source of money. Every state agency would love to have that. You know, if we could go out and do these bondings and then carve out a designated revenue source. And we never criticized, with respect to that loan, the capacity or the ability of that power generator to pay that loan. What we did criticize is they should have gone to the private market. And if the Infrastructure Authority needed the appropriation, they needed to come through the budget process and defend their budget. And now we have other projects looking at this money because, frankly, it's easy. And it's a low interest rate, and they're not calculating our total rate of return. This program needs to be looked at.
30 seconds.
There's a problem.
On or against the bill?
I don't know.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, Mr. President, and the concerns brought by my colleague are valid, and I think something like some of those things need to be looked at. But I would hope that the body would vote for this bill, even though if it fails, what I was talking about earlier is better for what I'm trying to do. I still think we need to have the rules in there. I think that's really important. And we've taken out the one glitch in it about taking the legislature out of the loop for $100 million. We've reached a compromise on the amount. So, you know, if this bill should die, you know, we don't have the rulemaking procedure in there, which is important. And we go back to those real high limits, which a lot of you don't like at all. So I would ask the body to vote aye on this bill.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Hastert, no to aye. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 conflict.
House Bill 215, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 215 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the legislature stand in recess till 2 p.m. We do. What did I say?
The legislature.
I think they adjourned about 30 days ago. So I move that the Senate stand in recess till 2 p.m. We do have the issue of the appointments, and I forgot to ask you about what time you want to do that, 1:30?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay, so if that works for everybody, the second Republicans will caucus at 1:30 in the room up here to the right to consider appointments.
So, any announcements? Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your Select Water Committee will meet tonight upon adjournment to listen to discussion on the Montana-Wyoming lawsuit.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor real quick?
Yes,
Mike?
May.
Members of the Senate, I'm going to have to really clean my act up because someone showed up there. I didn't even realize, but my colleague from Campbell County and Washakie reminded me that my wife's up there. Lorraine, welcome to the Senate. Mr. President, I can't believe I didn't see her walk in.
I did.
Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations will meet tomorrow, Thursday, February 21st at 12:15 in room S13 to considering the following re-referral, House Bill 230, Engross School Safety and Security. And Mr. President, we'll also meet on adjournment today to continue discussion about interim topics in S13.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet in approximately 15 minutes to discuss interim topics.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Joint Conference Committee on House Bill 102, Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons, was going to meet at 1:30, and we're going to have to reschedule that. We'll consult with our House colleagues.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, is going to meet on interim tomorrow morning at 8:30 in the House committee room. That's room H18 to discuss interim topics. Further, Mr. President, your conference committee on message number 382, that's
I'm trying to remember. Senate File 36, that's the publishing bill, Mr. Chairman. We'll meet at 12:30 today in the Senate Corporations Room.
Senator Hastert. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the minority party will be caucusing at 1:30 also up in our upper office phone booth. Thank you.
The upper office. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your conference committee on Senate File 159 was set for 1:30. We'll have to reschedule that.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Judiciary Committee will meet tomorrow, shortly after the noon recess, in House Room 8 to talk about interim topics.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 8:30 tomorrow morning up in S-14 to interview some of the governor's nominees that are related to our committee.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m. Republicans will caucus at 1:30.